Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your hosts, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, first episode of what seems to be a month, and it's a big one. We're going to be talking about Shang-Chi today, and we're going to review it. We're going to spoil it. So spoiler warning from here on out, I guess, because who knows? Maybe I'll slip something up as we talk about these trailers, because we have two trailers, too. We haven't been around for a month. You know, life gets in the way. You were over in California. I got lazy. Mm-hmm. And now we're back, and we skipped some really important trailers. And we're going to play makeup the next few weeks. And the first one is going to be No Way Home, Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man movie. Dropping some confirmations of who's going to be in it. We know finally that the multiverse is going to be exploded in this, so that's confirmed. We see Dr. Octopus, a glimpse of Lizard. We see a goblin bomb, Electro Lightning. What do you think of this trailer that we just got?
It showed a lot without showing a lot, if it makes any sense. Like, I think it showed a lot, but then there's like so many questions and so many things that I feel they didn't show. The premise kind of shocked me a little bit of how like the multiverse has started, because Peter's like, I just want to be erased as Spider-Man, pretty much. And that kind of like took me by surprise. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, so let's start there. Two things that you brought up, right? So the Peter response is a very reset button, right? It's kind of like when you send a text message that you don't mean to send, and you're like, crap, can I pull that back? Can I hit undo, right?
I do that.
Yeah, right?
All the time.
This is a child, essentially, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid who really is just outed as a murderer when, you know, he's not a murderer. We know he didn't kill Mysterio, but he's out it for the world to see. His friends are in jeopardy. His family's in jeopardy. So he wants to hit that reset button. And I think it's kind of like very apropos with Tom Holland, not just Peter Parker, because Tom Holland kind of spoils everything. He kind of like ruins big moments, and he just ruined the multiverse in this movie. So I like that they and it could be inadvertently doing this, but I like that they kind of made Tom Holland's loose lips and talkative nature be the reason why the multiverse is exploding. And then you have Doctor Strange, right? So the theory online, and a lot of people are thinking that that's actually not our Stephen Strange, and that he's possessed by none other than Mephisto. You know, this is going to be not the first time I talk about Mephisto on this episode, but where do you sit with that theory? Do you put credence into that, or are you just like, man, people will just think what they want to think?
The latter.
Yeah.
I just think, I mean, how many times and how many theories do we go through in Marvel shows and TV shows? And, you know, lately it's everything's about Mephisto. Yeah, I don't see it.
It would be crazy if it were, though, right? Imagine, like, we don't even find out that this is not our Doctor Strange until the very last scene of this movie, setting up Madness in the Multiverse, right? Or this Doctor Strange is actually Doctor Strange, and we get a different Doctor Strange, played by Benedict Cumberbatch still, that is bargained with Mephisto or Dormammu or Shuma-Gorath, who have been rumored for this next Doctor Strange Madness in the Multiverse. And there's a lot that we're going to draw parallels to with this movie and with Shang-Chi, because Doctor Strange is now like your focal point of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, we thought it was Wanda, but like, you've got sorcerers in Shang-Chi, you've got Doctor Strange in Spider-Man, then you have Doctor Strange's movie coming out like right after that. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Doctor Strange in Eternals or Wong in Eternals. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like cohesiveness between that.
Yeah.
The thing about this is I love what we're getting in terms of like what you said, like we got a lot but a little. You know what I'm saying? We got more Zendaya and more Ned than anything, and the peppering in of the Sinister Six. And when Alfred Molina pops up and he's like, hey, Peter, you know he's not talking to Tom Holland. You know that that's another Spider-Man that he's talking to.
Yeah, because how does he know what that Peter looks like?
Exactly. And if it, you know, Tom Holland's smarter than the other two Spider-Men. So it, when he comes into that scene, you know, it looks like it was cut for that. Like, it's cut like, oh, he sees him and he's in the Iron Spider suit. You know he's talking to another Spider-Man. And I'm totally here for it. He's talking to Tobey Maguire. And I can't wait for that.
Well, yeah, because he can't talk to Andrew Garfield. He doesn't know what he looks like either, so.
Exactly. The suits look the same, but you know who he's talking to. I'm excited for this. Was there anything that kind of stuck out besides the, you know, the general tone of the trailer?
Well, like you said, all the peppering of Sinister Six. They did a good job of, you know, they showed one. That was it.
Yeah.
And that was Alfred Molina. And they did a very good job of hinting at everything else. So.
Yeah. Did you watch like the slowed down version?
I did not.
Where they show, so like there's a portal being opened. Wong, he's probably coming in from Shang-Chi's sister's fight club, where he's fighting the Abomination. And who is in the background but Lizard? Okay. Like, you see his arm coming through. So I think that that's pretty cool. Or you know, this takes place in the same time as Shang-Chi, so maybe that's Wong returning from fighting the Abomination, and people are like, oh my god, it's Lizard, you know?
That's possible.
Yeah, there's so much possibilities with this. We don't even know where Mysterio is. We don't know if, you know, who's coming. Like, is Rhino going to show up in this? God, hope not. But I'm curious to see where they go with this. Overall, the number one trailer is the only one I'm going to watch. And I said that for, what did I say that for? Eternals. I said that for Venom 2, right? And you texted me when Venom 2 came out. You're like, do you see this new trailer? There's more Carnage. And I was like, no, I'm staying away from it. Until I went and saw Shang-Chi. And they played right ahead of it, both movies. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. But they both look phenomenally better than, like, Eternals looks worlds away of what Venom is, but Venom gave me a little more excitement to go and see it. You know what I mean?
You kind of thought that they would do that, so maybe you should have showed up like right when the movie started.
Listen, I'll be honest with you. I didn't. That's not me. Number one, I'm there 25 to a half hour early. secondly, I wasn't even thinking about what trailers were going to pop on there, and Venom it popped up. I'm like, oh well, there it goes. It's kind of ruined for me, but I like what I saw. I like that we saw Shriek. Mm-hmm. I like that we see more Carnage. I like the oh shit, it's a red one line. I think that that's pretty neat. I thought that was fun. Are you seeing Venom in theaters in October, or are you waiting until DVD?
Probably. You know, we saw Shang-Chi. It was the first time I've been to the theater since Sonic the Hedgehog.
Jesus. Valentine's Day 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the last time we were in theaters. So probably, you know,
okay.
It wasn't that bad. You know, it wasn't, we went on Labor Day weekend. It wasn't busy at all.
No, my theater wasn't packed at all. I think there were like five people.
And you went Friday night.
Friday night at like 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I went Monday afternoon at 1.
Yeah.
There might have been 20 people in our theater.
No, that's not bad at all. Well, I only asked about Venom selfishly so I could put it on our episode guide, so I'm glad. And then again, the trailer gods bless us, right? We've always struggled with, you know, getting trailers on a Tuesday after we record on a Monday or a Thursday after our Wednesday episode post, and we got two this past week. We got the Matrix trailer, which we're going to give a full trailer park segment to next week, but today, Monday, as we record this, we got Hawkeye's first trailer. And yeah. It's very whimsically Christmas. It's like Marvel's Die Hard.
Dude, I was going to say that. I thought that. I was like, Die Hard meets Home Alone.
A lot of things stand out. They're not shy about Kate Bishop at all.
No.
And who their she relationship is and in
what
it.
Mantle yeah. she took over.
Yeah, they're very quick with that. I like that they're picking up with the Ronin storyline. I think that that's great. They didn't show all the villains. They showed Echo in like a dark room for a second, and who had more time than any other character in this was Pizza Dog. And I'm cool with that. So what do you think of this Hawkeye Christmas trailer that gives us confirmation November 24th? What did you think?
Not what I expected at all.
Okay.
like you said, we talked off air, like, I didn't expect Christmassy. It's very diehard-like. But the music itself, like, it just, like you said, whimsical. And it's not what I expected. It looks great. Looks awesome. And, you know, we've talked about before that, you know, we always thought Hawkeye kind of got the short end of the stick with it. All the Avengers.
Yeah, he should have died in every movie.
Yeah. But I really like what they did with him in Avengers Endgame. You know, with him, with him becoming Ronin. And I was like, okay, that's something they can really build on. And, you know, we're going to see that. We're going to see his past haunting him. You know, with the snap, he went crazy and, you know, went on this Ronin rampage. And now that his family's back, he's like, okay, I'm going to be the family man. And now, you know, we see that Ronin is haunting him. And, you know, that's pretty cool because I really like they're kind of giving, like, I'm really glad that he's getting his own storyline.
Yeah. And like, I also love that Marvel, just with every show that they put out, the tone changes.
Oh, 100%.
Like, it's not NCIS, you know what I mean? Where it's the same thing, just in a different location. Like, this is giving you, like, different layers, drama, time travel, horror-esque, you know, now we're getting kind of Christmassy, but this was, like, I think a diversion of what we're really going to get with this, because, like, we got the, you know, the trailer with the Christmas backing. I think that this is going to be a little bit toned down from what Daredevil was, and I think it's going to be more violent than we ever gave it credit for.
And I'm hoping,
you know what
for
I
that.
Mean. And what's cool is, like, Yelena didn't even pop up at all, and you know she's going to show up. You know, not only is Ronan haunting Hawkeye, but his, you know, his actions after, you know, Vormir are going to be are hunting him.
Yeah.
Because Elaine, you know, Val's got Yelena now. So I'm very curious to see where they go with this. I wouldn't be surprised if Val shows up in, like, episode 4 or 5.
Oh, I definitely think they're coming.
She needs to.
Because I don't he's never going to get a movie. So, you know, at the end of Black Widow, when Val was like, he killed your sister. And to Yelena, like, that's going to, like, where else is that going to fit? It's not going to fit in the next Avengers movie. It's not going to fit in a Captain America movie. It's going to fit in Hawkeye. So either it's going to be an ending and lead into season 2, or it's going to be, I don't think it's going to, I think, you know, he's dealing with Ronan first, and it could be, you know, the second half or the third act of that season. But there's no way they can't touch on that. That was too big of a scene at the end of Black Widow for them to go, that's going to be years down the line.
Absolutely. And, like, I honestly am getting, like, early vibes that Clint doesn't make it out of the first season. You know, he's finally got his family. He's retired. The past is haunting him. And then there's that line where he's like, there's nothing to worry about. I'm going to be fine. Like, that makes me feel like he's not going to be fine.
Well, like you said, like, how many times did we think he was going to die?
Well, he was rumored. Like, they said, like, we were going to kill Hawkeye in this episode or in this movie, and we didn't. We chose not to. So, like, I'm very curious to see where they go with this. But we'll see, man. November 24th, we'll end up doing target practice with Hawkeye at some point, an after show of sorts, and we'll see. I'm excited for both of these, nonetheless.
Definitely.
And this is, like, an all-Marvel episode, minus what we're going to talk about now, and that's the picks of the week, because we're going to stay away from the newsroom, because there's a bunch of rumors on there, and I don't really want to, you know, most of the rumors deal with What If, and I don't want to spoil any potential future episodes for What If, or current episodes of What If that are out that people haven't watched yet. So, we've got some new comics coming out, 4 new comics, and then I got a special little shout-out that I'd like to talk about at the end, but let's start with Image. There's a story coming out called Primordial, and it's written by Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino. Mind-bending sci-fi collides with Cold War thriller in a 6-issue miniseries by the best-selling and Eisner-winning creative team behind Gideon Falls. In 1957, the USSR launched a dog, Laika, into Earth's orbit. 2 years later, the U.S. responded with 2 monkeys, Abel and Baker. These animals never returned, but unbeknownst to everyone, They did not die in orbit. They were taken, and now they are coming home. It sounds crazy.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. And awful?
Awesome.
Awesome. Okay. Because those words kind of straddle the same line for you sometimes. when you're like, this movie was awesome, and I watch it, I'm like, this movie is awful. I love Jeff Lemire stuff, and I've looked at some previews of this, and it looks absolutely amazing. This is like 100%, you know, it's my pick, but like, even if I didn't have this segment, I was going to talk about it, because this book looks amazing. It sounds awesome. It's a small little series, so 6 issues. Probably will be a movie, if I'm being honest. But I'm looking at this and being like, this is going to be fantastic. The next one is are you going to pick that one up?
I might pick up an Image book, believe it or not.
Oh my God, the sky is falling.
I mean, I've been getting Spawn, but that's a popular title.
That doesn't count.
I got The Good Asian.
Yeah. Did you get one or did you get multiple?
Oh, I have. I'm reading the series. What are we on,
3? Okay. All right. Well, let's see. The next one's Marvel. I'm curious to see where you go with this one, because it has to deal with something that's coming in the pipeline, and that's Eternals Thanos Rises, written by Kieran Gillen with art from Dustin Weaver. And Eternals are created, not born. They have families, but their families make no new children. It's simply not what Eternals do. Some of them thought they could be or could find a way to change that and believe it would be the best. They were terribly, terribly wrong. Not to mention Thanos starts. What do you think about this? You going to get a Eternals Thanos Rises book?
I don't know. I got the Eternals number one from like last year.
Yeah.
It was okay. I wasn't digging it and said I didn't get anything else. So.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll see. I'll probably ask how you like it, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
I know you're not going to get this one, but I have to put it on there because Batman Day is approaching.
Yes.
And I believe it's tomorrow, or I believe it's Wednesday.
It's normally today. Around my birthday, so.
Yeah, Batman and Hot Dog Day are the same day, so it's coming up, and it's called I Am Batman. It's coming from DC. John Ridley's writing it. And in the throes of Future State, the streets of Gotham City cry for justice, and Jace Fox answers the call. With a new and improved batsuit, Jace hits the streets to inspire and protect. As he follows the trail of the voice of misinformation and violence, the anarchist anti-oracle, can the new Dark Knight counterbalance their plan to inspire armed rebellion in the citizens of Gotham? Can one man inspire a city? You picking that up?
I was really excited when you were talking about Batman, but then when you were talking about this, I did not like this in Future State. It was one of the...
I don't know how many times we have to say it, but I keep putting this on there because of it.
I was so excited for it. Like, I was like, oh, John Ridley's writing it. It's going to be great. I didn't like it at all. It was probably middle grade for me. It wasn't the worst stuff at Future State, but it definitely wasn't my favorite. So, probably not.
Oh, yeah. Well, Future State was awful.
Well, Future State was trash, but...
Yeah.
I mean, like, if I had to rank them, it was middle grade, this storyline. It wasn't the worst one, but
it wasn't the best. It wasn't Supergirl or The Flash, but I'm going to get this. I'm going to give it a shot. I like what they're doing with the new, like, Second Son stuff that they did digitally first. So I'm going to give it a shot. I'll give it maybe 2 issues. If it doesn't grab me, then I'll move on. And then finally, before I go into a special shout-out, we've got Titans United. The Titans face their greatest challenge, their own powers. Nightwing, Donna Troy, Superboy, Starfire, Raven, Beast Boy, and Red Hood kick off a thrilling new case that will lead one of their own to question not only their place on the team, but their very existence. You picking that up?
That's a possibility. I really like the Teen Titans stuff and have been. So, that's a possibility.
Nice. All right, so we're going to move into a special shout-out. I think I'm going to do this every month because I like to support my friends. Football season is happening, Chuck. We are in week one as you're listening to this live. And for the people listening out there, who's our team?
Philadelphia Eagles.
That's right, and they won recently.
Yes, they did.
And we have a wonderful safety on the Philadelphia Eagles named Rodney McLeod. Unfortunately, wasn't able to play. He was hurt. Can't wait to get him back on the field. You're a fan of Rodney, right?
Oh, yeah. He's been a solid player for a while now.
Yeah, Super Bowl champion, Rodney McLeod, right? Yep. He's got a ring with us. So I'm giving a special shout-out to our friend of the podcast, Dion. His magazine, In Club Magazine, has their new September issue coming out with none other than Philadelphia's own, Philadelphia Eagles safety, Rodney McLeod on the cover.
Awesome.
Very awesome. He sent me the early preview. I'm looking at the cover right now. Rodney looks great. Every issue for this magazine, if you haven't heard of it, you should have heard of it if you listen to us. But every issue is a new benchmark, so it gets bigger and bigger. They've had Malcolm Jenkins on. Now they have Rodney McLeod. They talk sneaker culture, which is huge. You're not a sneakerhead. Yeah, I know you're not.
Especially with my foot now. I ain't wearing anything.
I know. You wear Crocs and New Balances, yeah. And that's fine. You're an old man. I get it. Almost 40. But I like to peruse the sneaker channels. I can't afford half the shoes that are on there, and I like to, you know, to keep up with the trends. So that's always awesome that it's on there. And also they have the Ultimate Jeans Guide. I'm a jeans guy. You know this. I don't wear shorts at all.
No, not at all.
And I need good pairs of jeans. So if you're like me and you want to get good pairs of jeans, this is the magazine for you. But it's also a great magazine that's for life and style of millennial life. And it's run by a great guy who's a dear friend of mine, a tier one active geek listener, tier one active geek in general. So go out and get that inclubmagazine.com and wherever magazines are sold. So go check that out. Now, Chuck, I almost called you Chon. I don't know where that came from.
Chon, I like that.
Chon, it's your new name, buddy, because we're entering Shang-Chi. So
Chon, maybe Chon that was it.
Chon Miller. You're not Chon-Chi. That sounds like Speed Racer's girlfriend. We're entering the MCU Phase 4, the next chapter, Shang-Chi. 92% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. 98% fan score on Rotten Tomatoes. And I just did this review with Tom on Galaxy Wars, and I said that it deserves every point that it was given on that fan score, and I stand by it because, spoiler alert again, this is top 10 Marvel movie material for me.
I could see that. I haven't ranked it yet, but definitely.
Yeah, like origin stories of the Marvel MCU, this is like probably Mount Rushmore for me. It's top 4.
Huh. Yeah, it's definitely up there. It was a great, great origin story.
So let's kind of dive into it. A character that not a lot of people who are casual geeks know.
I knew of him, but didn't know a lot about him.
Yeah, and like if you're dealing with the MCU as we do here at Active Geek, you know the 10 rings. So when they say 10 rings at the bottom of it, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Isn't that the people who kidnapped Iron Man in the first Iron Man?
Yeah.
Where he made his first iron suit? Oh, wait. Isn't that Ben Kingsley, the Liverpool fan, who was in there just pretending to be the Mandarin in Iron Man 3? And then you see it and you're like, is this Iron Man 4? Because the Ten Rings are an Iron Man villain. That's what everybody thinks, right? But no, Shang-Chi, master of martial arts, kung fu master. He's going up against his father, Wenwu, a.k.a. the Mandarin, a.k.a. the devil, a.k.a. whatever you want to call him. He's a bad guy who got power hungry because of rings. There's some family drama. He's got his friend who likes him without a shirt on. I'm talking about Awkwafina, your favorite actress. And then there's ties to the MCU on a scale that I really didn't think were going to be as grand going into this movie. The way that this connected to the future of the MCU is very significant in my mind. Mm-hmm. But I want to know where you go with this. What did you think about this movie? What did you like about it?
So first off, I loved it. It was better than I expected. Like, I thought it would be, because like, I've never hated any MCU movie. So I knew going in, I was like, I'm going to like it. I didn't think how much I would like it. You know, it was a character that I was not really familiar with. I mean, I know the Mandarin. I've known of the Mandarin even before Iron Man 3. So I knew that character. I, you know, I knew they changed some stuff, obviously, because, you know, in the comics, his father is not the Mandarin.
Right. But his father is a baddie.
Yes. Fu Manchu.
Yep.
And, you know, they changed that later on because they thought it was racially inappropriate.
Yeah, probably not the best name for, you know, a character.
No. And I think they changed it a couple years ago.
It's the same, you know, same thing with M'Baku.
Yeah.
And it's a smart move on both, yeah, both parts.
Yeah. You know, M'Baku, they changed, I think, gracefully. Like, they still kind of paid homage with him being part of the tribe that he was. But, you know, with, you know, Fu Manchu was completely out of there. And they changed him with the Mandarin, which I didn't. A lot of times I call myself a comic purist, like, stuff that I know and I love, and they change it. I'm like, eh. But this I wasn't too familiar with, so it didn't really affect me as much. But
yeah.
I liked it because it didn't feel like a Marvel movie, which a lot of times I would think would be a bad thing. Like, oh, that's it's not a Marvel movie. But in this case, it was great because, like, it didn't feel like your normal superhero movie. You know, it wasn't about capes and cowls and, you know, superpowers. Yes, the Mandarin did have these mythical, magical rings. But it was, they did it in a way where it's like, this is an MCU movie, but it's different than anything you've ever seen.
Okay. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum when, in terms of feel. I felt that this, what, like, when I saw it, you know, going into it, I had high expectations because the trailer was amazing. The way that they set it up and the cinematography in the trailer, I was like, this looks amazing. Going into it, the first thing I thought of was that this is phase one early Marvel, like Marvel at their best in terms of, like, Iron Man, Captain America, you know, just bringing in these characters and giving you not only, you know, a origin story for your hero. Mm-hmm. You got an origin story for your villain with Wenwu. And, you know, it's easy to call him the Mandarin. I don't think anybody called him the Mandarin besides him by saying this is what the American public called him.
Yeah.
And so we can kind of wash away the Mandarin, change and, you know, character development. He's Wenwu. Zhu Wenwu is what we'll call him. You got the origin story for him, right? You got the origin story for their mother and Talo. You've got the origin story for the Ten Rings and what they really signify and how much more powerful they are than what we saw in Iron Man. And then you get the introduction to Shawn, who is Shang, but we get an intro. We get the intro to him and then the intro to Shang-Chi. I felt that was amazing. And then just the world building, the family dynamic, you know, that's a huge task to tackle because this has a very big ensemble cast for an origin story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you have Shang, you have Katie, you have Wenwu, you have Zhai Ling, you have Li, you have Ying Nan, you know, Razor Fist, great for the scenes that he was in. It was fun to see that he was an absolute Fast and the Furious fan with his car. But, like, you're introducing these characters and making them work and juggling them in three different acts of the movie. Especially, like, your two main characters, Katie and Shang. Like, when you first meet them to when where they end, they're nowhere near the same characters.
No.
And I think that that's great.
You know, they were slackers. What, mid-20s, still working at a minimum
wage... valet service.
Yeah, minimum wage job, not really doing anything with their lives, and just, they have each other, that's it. And then at the end, they still have each other. But now they have so much more responsibility and so much more pride in themselves. And...
Yeah, I mean, Shang is a Avenger now.
Yeah, yeah.
Katie's the man in the chair, woman in the chair, if you will. But, you know, just as important, you know, according to Wong.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And he's like, I need you too. So, like, I'm not jumping on the, is Katie an Avenger
thing? No, at all.
But she's very important to this now. She's going to, you know, your heroes need their counterparts, right? You know, Spidey's got Ned, Tony has Happy, you know, Cap had Bucky, who then, you know, he was a super soldier, but then he had Sam, who then turned into Captain America. So maybe that's not a good example there. But, you know, Shang needed someone, and what we learned, like, kind of thought that we were going to get the sister, kind of like Ant-Man and the Wasp kind of deal, right? Where Shang and Xia Ling were going to team up and help Wong conquer the world, right?
Yeah,
and bring honor back to their family's name and the Ten Rings. And we sit through this entire movie, the first end credit scene that we'll talk about, but we get to that second end credit scene where she's like, yeah, I'm going to be a terrorist. Like, I'm going to start the Female League of Assassins with the Ten Rings. Where do you sit with that kind of transition at the end?
See, I loved it because, you know, we see her, the first time we see her is in the Fight Club. And
yeah, she great scene.
And she kind of like, I built this. You know, I was on my own. I didn't need anyone. This is what I did. And, you know, obviously it's illegal, and I'm sure she's had many illegal dealings to get where she was at. You know, you just don't...
For sure.
You just don't, you know, it's not a clean business. So, you know, she's been in the underworld, and then this empire, almost, of criminal syndicate is dropped in your lap. What are you going to do? And she's...
Yeah, I mean, you could reform it and do good, right?
But that's not... That wasn't her, you know what I mean? Like, she's... I mean, I'm not saying she was a criminal before, but she definitely dealt with criminals and had criminal ties. And now, you know, this is a multi-billion dollar organization. And you have unlimited, you have unlimited resources. So
yeah, and there's a lot that kind of spins out of that, right? So we get her having the Abomination and Wong essentially doing a WWE match where they're friends at the end.
Yeah.
A lot to digest there. My theory is that Wong is kind of rehabbing and rehabilitating these heroes or these villains.
Yeah, that's a huge thing because, like, obviously, when's the last time we saw Abomination? Was in...
Two Hulks ago.
Yeah. And then where the next time we're going to see him? We know he's... Tim Rice is showing up in, or Tim Roth is going to show up in She-Hulk. So, you know, I was always wondering how we got from Incredible Hulk to there. And now we kind of have, like, the linchpin in the middle. But how are, you know, because She-Hulk comes out next year. So, are we going to see him in Doctor Strange with Wong? Or are we going to see...
Possibly. My thought is that Val is behind this.
Okay.
Like, we didn't see her, right?
No, but that would make sense.
I have a feeling that Val has the rights to the Abomination and is kind of, like, controlling him, holding him, whatever, and putting him in these scenarios. And we just so happen to see him fight Wong, right? But also, when Shang is fighting his sister, there's a Madripoor flag kind of etched into the wall. This takes place at the same time as Falcon and Winter Soldier. You have a criminal underground or criminal fight club going on in Macau, which isn't too far from Madripoor. Mm-hmm. How connected is Xia Ling, and how much does she know about Sharon, the power broker? You know what I mean? There's a lot of questions there.
It had a lot the same feel to it. Like that scene.
Yeah, I feel.
Imagine.
I feel like we see her in like Falcon and Winter Soldier 2 before we see her in Shang-Chi 2.
Yeah. That would make sense.
What'd you think of Razor Fist?
Amazing that I called it, but.
Yeah, you did.
I liked him. You know, he. It's what I expect. They didn't have too many lines. You know, they didn't give him both razor fists because that's super impractical. Like, he at least needs one hand to pee or something. I like that it was interchangeable. Like, he could...
Yeah, I wish it were a little more up to date where he could just turn a dial and have a prosthetic hand, though.
Okay, that'd be cool.
You know what I mean?
But
like a Swiss Army knife.
I thought he was cool. Like you said, he's not very subtle. Like you said, the Fast and Furious, like his car said Razor Fist down the side. Like, if you're trying to be discreet, that's not one way to do it.
Yeah. But, and like even that first scene on the bus, right? Like that's kind of the tone. That was the tone setter for me. The fight choreography was A1
on this. Amazing. And because one of the things, like we'll talk about the stuff I love is like it was obviously, you know, very martial arts inspired.
And super kung fu.
But nothing like we've ever seen. Like we've seen fight scenes in like Captain America when he was fighting Bartok the Leaper, and we've seen Iron Man versus Cap versus Bucky, like that. But like this was new level. Like there was no aliens, there was no robots, there was no wizards, like there was none of that fighting. It was hand-on-hand combat, and it was amazing.
Did you forget about the dragons and Soul Eaters?
Well, I'm talking about...
Because they were there.
No, they were there. But what I'm talking about is, like, the fight scenes itself, like, in the bus. And then...
Oh, yeah. Well, you kind of, like, with this movie, right? So, like, you kind of get, like, the mini-boss feel, like, as you're kind of working your way up, right? So, you started at the bus scene, and he's fighting the thugs, right? And you were talking about how Razor Fist isn't subtle, right? He stands up on that bus, and he's bigger than the entire back of the bus.
Yeah. Florian, you know what I mean? And he's a big dude.
Yeah, and he looked like he got bigger in this. And he's cloaked, and he pulls that off, and he's even bigger somehow. You know what I mean? So, like, you work your way up. That's, like, the mini-boss. And then we get to Wenwu, who we thought was the major boss, right? Where he's got, you know, the rings and he's kicking ass. No. You level up to the Soul Eaters. And then you level up to the giant Soul Eater, who, when we get to Tao Lo and Michelle Yeoh, second time in the MCU, I might add, goes, there's a strong evil behind her. I was like, you gotta be kidding me, Mephisto. I went right to Mephisto.
I didn't think that.
Because he would have fit perfect in there. I wasn't thinking giant soul-sucking Cthulhu dragon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We knew the Great Protector was going to be there.
Yeah.
And we knew, like, I kind of figured that we were going to get Neverending Story vibes when, you know, Shang's riding on the dragon, like Falcor. And I was like, yes, Bastion confirmed. But I never thought that we would have went, like, so deep into the mythos, right, where we're getting the nine-tailed dragons, we're getting Shishis, we're getting Morris, who is a definite toy grab, but is everyone's favorite character, who is a Hundun. And then we get these giant dragons fighting in the third act. I didn't see a giant dragon fight, and I certainly didn't think it was going to be the counterpart dragon that we got. If it was a dragon fight, I was going to think it was going to be Fing Fang Foom.
Yeah.
Who would have got dusted by that other dragon? Both of those dragons. He would have got dusted.
Yeah. What I like, you know, we've been... This is one of the most mythical... You know, we were very mythical because we've seen, you know, space. And we've seen aliens and stuff like that. But, like, when they get into the land and when Michelle Yeoh's there, like... The mythical creatures there. I'm like, oh, like, you know this, that I'm very into that culture and very into the mythos of all that. So, like, to me, like, this was right up my alley. I'm, like, cheering, you know, when we've seen those creatures. But, and then you said Morris is a toy grab. They already have a stuffed animal of him at Disney store.
His toy's been out for over a year.
I wasn't paying attention then.
Yeah, when you look at, like, the Marvel Legends, the Katie toy comes with Morris. The only thing that was kind of kept secret besides the main villain was Trevor.
Best. One of the best parts right there.
Yeah, it was huge. It was a great, great tie-in. Like, when they mentioned him at dinner when Wenwu was talking about who he is to Katie, and they mentioned him, I'm like, oh, that's smart. That's nice that they tied it in. And when he's down there, you know, Phantom of the Opera... doing his thing, I was like, oh, you just leveled up even further than I thought.
Yeah, so, like, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, okay, like, when, you know, they show when Wu and all this, I'm like, okay, how are they going to explain? I was like, they cannot just forget. And Marvel does a good job of explaining everything, even though, like, you know, at the time, they had no idea what they were going to do with the Mandarin. And, you know, I'm sure Shang-Chi wasn't even on the radio at that point.
That's what a lot of people are saying. Tom said the same thing yesterday, that, like, Shang-Chi probably wasn't in the pipeline.
No,
and,
I mean,
the way, like, I think, just, I don't want to keep cutting you off, but, like, think about how crazy you have to be and how good you have to be at your job to have a character who's possibly not in the pipeline at all, right? Bring him into the fray and connect him as well as they did, but as, like, as an integral part of the future moving forward. You know what I mean? And, like, just having Wong in there to bring everything out into the open was fantastic.
Like, you know, I'm sure they would like to sit back and say, oh, we've been thinking about this for 15 years. I don't think that's...
No, I don't think so.
But you know what I mean? Like, in a proud person, like, yeah, of course we did this. Of course, you know, everything was been connected since day one. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
I think they...
Not at all, because they didn't have half the characters day one.
I think they have good writing, and they have good working relationship. Like, they can go from one person to another and seamlessly tell a story without it feeling different. And
yeah, and come on, man, castings, can they not miss?
No. And
like, when we talked Shang-Chi, like, we were like, everyone's like, Louis Tan, it's gonna be him, or, you know, not Donnie Yen, but like Brian T. Simu Liu, perfect for Shang-Chi.
Years ago, he was a friggin' model for stock footage.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was nobody. And then, you know, I know he's on Kim's Convenience that I've never saw, and you said it's pretty good.
Oh, yeah, he's hilarious in that.
But, you know, he's essentially a nobody. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's had small success in that, but that's about it. And to have this success that he's having is awesome. And, you know, that, like I said, it's Marvel. They have a formula. They know what they're doing. And they have a good creative team. Whether it be, you know, someone from 10 years ago to now, they all connect it. And it's amazing. Like, with the Trevor stuff, I was hoping, like, when you said, when that scene at dinner, I was happy with that.
Yeah.
I was happy.
I didn't think he was going to be so integral.
No, I was happy with it. I was like, okay, I'm good. And then when, like you said, the Phantom of the Opera scene was like amazing. Like, I clapped a little bit. I was the only one. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, because you're probably the only one who watched Iron Man 3 in that theater.
Yeah. I mean, Danielle remembered him. She was like, oh, yeah. Yeah. But, like, she, because I was like, the Mandarin, she was like, oh, yeah, I guess. Like, she goes, I remember his face. But
you're like, oh yeah, Mandarin. Oh, I love their oranges.
Like, but you, like, know. No, and or I was wearing, you know, I didn't have a Shang-Chi shirt, but I was wearing my Marvel 10-year shirt that you got me for Christmas one year, and the guy walks up to me and goes, oh, I guess I know what you're seeing, huh? I'm like, yeah, no shit. But
should have been, I'm here for Candyman.
But, like, yeah, I, you know, I'm sure that of the 20 people were there, maybe 3 people seen Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was super excited about how they did it. And like you said, like, Ben Kingsley is a great actor, and he always has been. But, like, his role of Trevor is amazing. Like, it's obviously a character that was never in the MCU or the comics. But, you know, one of my best scenes was Katie thought he was dead.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm acting. And I was like, oh, that's
perfect. No, it wasn't Katie. It was Morris.
Okay, yeah. He just looks like a big old butthole with wings to me.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like a furry butthole.
Or Hundun.
What?
He's a Hundun.
But, yeah, came up to him. He's like, I'm okay. And then just goes back. Like, I'm like, okay. Like, he was a great comic relief for a movie. Because Marvel does pepper in comic reliefs in there. And, you know, Ben Kingsley was one of them. So I
mean, this whole movie had comic relief, right? You put Awkwafina in there, who we really haven't talked about, and I know you're not a huge fan, but I love Awkwafina. I liked her since, you know, I watched her YouTube series and stuff. I know you're not high on her, but she was amazing in this.
So, you know, one of your questions, and we're kind of just like free for all now, but like one of your questions was, what thing did you hate? And going into this, I was like, it's going to be Awkwafina.
Yeah.
I've never liked her in anything live action. Like Crazy Rich Asians is one of my favorite movies. She annoyed me the hell out of me in that movie. The only things that I like her in is when she does voice acting. Like she was,
Well, she's got a great voice.
Yeah, she was great in Raya and the Last Dragon, and she was great as a Skeksis in the Dark Crystal sequel series. So like,
yeah,
it or prequel series. I'm sorry, but like, it was. I generally don't like her, but she did not annoy me in this. I thought she was good. She wasn't. Normally, she's over the top with everything.
Okay. Well, I got a crush on her, so I'm not going to say anything bad about her.
But no, I liked her in this.
She's on my list of people I want to meet.
I liked her in this movie. So that was not a gripe.
Was there anything you didn't like?
Not really. Like, I can't.
Same.
Like, I know a lot of people, like, if they're purists, like I said, was, you know, with the. With the change of Shang-Chi's father and stuff like that, and like,
but he wasn't the Mandarin.
No, he wasn't.
You know, so you can't even nitpick on that because he never called himself the Mandarin. He said that's what the Western world
It is not the original from the comics, but that didn't bother me. So like, there's really nothing I didn't like. Like I said, going in. I was being biased, and I was like, it's going to be Awkwafina. And it wasn't. Yeah. So there was really nothing that I can nitpick on this movie.
Okay, same. I love the choreography. I love the soundtrack. I love the dialogue. Mm-hmm. The script was beautiful. The way that the movie flowed was beautiful. The cinematography was flawless. It was amazing. Every scene that they captured that traditional kung fu stuff, there was Crouching Tiger aspects in it. They really did their homework on this. Destin Daniel Cretton, amazing. Another big win for Marvel when it comes to picking directors. This was a beautiful film. I loved absolutely everything about it, and it'll reflect on my geek grader. So let's kind of go future building. I know you're not a big future theory guy, so I'll hit you with what I got, and then we'll piggyback off each other. We know as far as where we go with Shang-Chi is that Shang is definitely an Avenger.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he's going to be a forefront member of the Avengers. I honestly think, you know, because of timing, I think he's going to take Black Panther's role in the Avengers as your martial artist, your hand-to-hand combatant. I did get very Black Panther vibes out of this, too, because it welcomed you into a whole new world and culture. So they win with that one. I actually thought that this movie and this environment that we're now immersed into can spin out a few characters. I went with four. I know it could spin out a few more, but number one was obviously Fing Fang Foom.
Oh, that's what I want.
Yeah, it's more realistic now because they, you know, it's back. You know, think about it. We couldn't have a giant dragon running around the streets and make it realistic. But now the world, like Fing Fang Foom, could be coming to Talo.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He could be a prisoner in Zhang Ling's fight club. You know, we don't know who she has prisoner, which brings me to my second character, which ties into the Madripoorian stuff. And I think this character would be great in the fight club if we see it moving forward. Hitmonkey.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think
Hitmonkey is your Rocket Raccoon replacement, because I think Rocket's going to go by the wayside after Guardians, right?
I think a lot of people will move.
Absolutely. We'll move away from Rocket, and they need that toy grab, right? You can't just rely on Groot. So I think Hitmonkey fits in there, right? And we've been high on Hitmonkey since they announced that doomed cartoon way back when.
Yeah. And, you know, remember we were talking Madripoor. There was a monkey.
Hitmonkey sign.
Like a symbol, graffiti symbol.
Yep.
And we're like, oh, it's Hitmonkey. And Hitmonkey, like, I did Fing Fang Foom, obviously, because, you know, I'm a huge Fing Fang Foom fan. But Hitmonkey, I didn't think of, but it totally fits in this world. 100%.
Yeah. And it fits in with the Power Broker.
Yeah.
You know, that could be a peace offering or, you know, the Macau Fight Club, now the Ten Rings, stole Hitmonkey from the Madripoor Fight Club. You know, there's so many people that could have popped in. Like I was telling Tom, Deadpool, Mordo, they could have been great combatants against the Abomination or Wong. I think that would have been cool. You could not, Mordo would have taken Wong's spot. You could have so many other people, but two more that kind of tickled my eardrums a little, tickled my fancy. The Iron Fist obviously should spin out of this.
Properly, yes. I agree.
He's who I thought would spin out of this. In the beginning, I thought we'd probably see Danny Rand in that final end credit scene, but we didn't, and I'm cool with that. I'd like to see either a new Iron Fist go to where the Ten Rings are looking for kind of salvation and answers, kind of like Doctor Strange did after he lost his, you know, his ability to be a surgeon, or he finds Talo and he has to fight the Living Protector.
Okay.
So I think that that could be really cool. And finally, the fourth one was Elektra.
Yeah.
And hear me out on Elektra, because a lot of people online were saying that Elektra was the death dealer. I don't think that that would have been a good move, because obviously the death dealer is dead, right? Yeah. I think Elektra could be one of the trainees under the Ten Rings. I think that that would be kind of cool. Like maybe the Ten Rings becomes the hand of the MCU.
Okay.
Or she's a target of the Ten Rings, and that's how we get her. I also thought that, like, where did all these, you know, badass women come from? Could they be the rogue Black Widows? And they just migrated to the Ten Rings. So, like, I'm curious to see where they go. Did you have any thoughts on where to go in the future with Shang-Chi?
I mean, obviously, like I said, Fing Fang Foom was the one. Because I've been talking about him for years. And, like you said, it fits now. It's not It's not out of the ordinary. Like, I thought we were getting him with Killian. Like, I thought they were going to spin out of him in Iron Man 3 when he started becoming look like a dragon. But it fits now. It's not like, you know, 5 years ago, you'd be like, why would a dragon be in there? It doesn't make any sense. Now it makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I won Fing Fang Foom. Obviously, he's not going to have purple pants, but.
Could.
It would be amazing if he did. But, you know, obviously, I love that idea. But the other three that you had totally make sense. Like, obviously, I think out of all, I think I want Hitmonkey more. Because we haven't seen him, and I think it would be more, like you said, toy grab. And then probably I think I would want Elektra next, because I love her character. Nothing against Iron Fist, but that kind of gave me a bad taste in my mouth. So
yeah, I mean, but you could redeem him, even if it is Finn Jones. I think with the right director and the right creative team, you could redeem him. But I think, you know, Elodie Young's Elektra is more plausible and more realistic at this moment, because we're pretty damn close to getting, you know, Matt Murdock in Spider-Man. So it would make sense for her. You know, you can't do Daredevil without Elektra in my mind. And Tom felt the same way when we were talking about this in Galaxy Wars. Now let's move to the sequel, because you know how I like to jump ahead. I think that the sequel is going to come sooner rather than later. I think this is going to be faster. I think it's going to be more along the lines of like Ant-Man and Wasp, how quick they got sequels, and Spider-Man, you know?
Okay. So you're talking about 3 years.
Yeah, if that. You know, they could be working on it right now.
I'm surprised they haven't announced it yet.
Right. So what I would think is I would like to introduce two characters, you know, because they like to introduce multiple villains. I'd like to introduce Bengal.
Okay.
You know, your mercenary, and Ghostmaker, another Kung Fu master. So you stick to the traditional hand-to-hand combat. You stick to the, you know, traditional Kung Fu. I think that that would be great. And while they're fighting Shang-Chi and Katie, who, you know, there's a, you know, you spoke about a theory that the man that Shang-Chi killed when he was 14 could be Katie's grandfather. And I love that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that makes sense, because he never said who it was, and he kind of was telling her, like, I'm not who you think I am. And that would make total sense that he goes there to kill the grandfather that, you know, killed his mother, moved to America to try to get away from it. Then Shang-Chi goes there, kills him, and then sees Katie there and befriends her.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty deep. Like, that's, I think that might be a little too close to, like, Falcon Winter Soldier, where Bucky became friends with Yuri. I think it's more on along the lines of what you're saying, based on the scene with in Katie's apartment or house, where they're talking about the Day of the Dead and her grandfather. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's an important overlooked scene that could come back in the sequel to kind of, you know, add a dark cloud around your hero and cause some strife between friends. So I do like that. But back to my sequel, and I think that that would be great in the sequel, but while Shang and Katie are fighting Bangle, Ghostmaker, whoever they turn into this, Xia Ling is growing the Ten Rings, and she's growing jealous of Shang-Chi, and she needs the rings. You can't be the Ten Rings without the rings. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have the Ten Rings, you're more powerful. If you don't, you're just, you know, ninjas with a flag.
Yeah.
So I think that she's going to grow tired of Shang using them, and she wants them. She thinks that they're her birthright because she's taking over the Ten Rings, and then she gets them, and she becomes power hungry just like Wenwu does. So I think that that's where it would go in terms of a sequel.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, obviously, you know, I don't see the Ten Rings fitting in a lot of places, and obviously the sequel makes sense. So, yeah, I kind of thought that's what they were going with her trying to get the rings.
Yep. And, you know, we got one thing left to do, buddy. Because we could talk all day about Shang-Chi because that's how good it was.
Definitely.
But we need our listeners to know exactly where we stand with this besides it being one of our favorites. Geek grade it, my friend.
Yeah.
1 to 10.
We'll go 8.9.
8.9 high. That's a high score. That might be the highest score you've ever given on the Geek Grader.
Maybe.
Yeah. Allow me to go higher. This is a 9.7.
Okay. Wow.
This is a 9.7. Just from filmmaking, this was beautiful. The way I walked out of this movie, I was so expectations blown. Brain blown. Loved it, right? And just the impact that this has moving forward is huge. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Shang-Chi or Katie in Doctor Strange's Madness in the Multiverse.
That would make sense.
Yeah. This is a 9.7 for me. That's high praise.
Like you said, it's the highest that I've given. I'm sure this is the highest that I've ever seen you given.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at, like, perfect MCU movies, you know, I consider Infinity War perfect. That's a 10. Endgame, perfect. That's a 10. Winter Soldier, a 10. Black Panther, 9.9.999. You know what I mean? That's damn near perfect. Some of the graphics kind of got me a little bit here and there, and that's nitpicking. But this is damn near perfect for me.
And
I loved it.
It was great. It exceeded my expectations.
But that's it, man. We're going to get out of here. Next week, we're going to be back with a brand new episode. Every Wednesday we're back. I've got, I think all of this month, which is September, and all of October already planned out. And next week we are going to be talking about and reviewing the pilot for Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
It's finally happening. We've talked about it for 7 years and it's finally coming to FX on Hulu, in a week or so. I believe it comes out this weekend. So we're going to be talking about that. We've got a bunch of great stuff coming out in the pipelines. We're going to be talking about the, you know, moving forward, we've got Why the Last Man. We've got Doom Patrol's premiere for their first episode for season 3. We're going to then go right into spooky season, where we're going to be talking the Long Halloween, the animated series or animated movies. We're going to be talking Venom 2. We've got some new Disney Plus Halloween stuff.
Yeah.
Star Wars Lego and the Muppets. That's coming in one episode. And then to end October, right around Halloween, we're going to talk Halloween Kills. because it's going to Peacock Plus. Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned Dune and The Eternals.
Yeah.
So I'm all the way up to September or to November right now. But that's it, man. Follow us on social media, The Active Geek. I'm going back to posting semi-regularly. Listen to Galaxy Wars every week. Next week, we're doing an archive episode as we break down the first episode of Heels, and we talk about a little bit of wrestling, a little bit of wrestling. You can listen to Cage My IQ every day on YouTube. Dan is out there crushing it. I will not be featured on an episode this week just because of timing and scheduling, but you can check out the episode he did with his buddy, and I'll be back next week on that one. But for the Active Geek Podcast, we will be back next week. I am Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.